Okay, welcome back. Episode 11. Today we welcome Joel David Reed, special effects creator, makeup, prosthetics, actor, horror fanatic.
Yes.
And we bring back for a second time Rick Creeper. How you guys doing, man?
Good, good. How's it going?
What's up, good, man. Appreciate you guys coming back. Well, especially you, Rick, and bringing along Joel.
Yeah, no problem.
And thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. Seriously. Bro. It is a horror podcast, but we don't have to stay within that. You know, we can go around it, come back to it, sure. You know, but I do want to hear about what you do, makeup-wise and things.
I've been, I started in the haunt, I started theater when I was three. I think I was like 8 years old when I did my own makeup. Just kind of kept with it, with acting, moved to California from Texas when I was about 17. Got right into the film industry, went right out of high school, but I think it was around 2012, I was building a haunted event.
Okay.
And I was in the props department, and then I got bounced to wardrobe, and then I got bounced to building the walls, and just kept bouncing around, and finally, when some makeup artists dropped out, they're like, oh, we need new makeup artists, we need more makeup artists, and I was like, oh, I can do it. And people even like, no, you can't. I'm like,
why not?
Exactly.
Right? Give it a shot.
Can't watch me. Right. And so, after that, my sister, who is also a makeup artist, her boyfriend or ex-boyfriend at the time, was working on his thesis film with Chapman University, and she didn't want to work on it by herself. So I got involved, and after that, I kept getting called back as a makeup artist, like, every weekend.
Makeup artist as strictly just applying makeup?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Just applying makeup, and it just kept going, like, for years. I mean, for the past 6 years, that has been my primary source of income, is just being a makeup artist, and just knocking it out every weekend from Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's what I did, and it's fun, and you know, I actually got to work with some people at Synapse Effects. Okay. I kind of did a little bit of an apprenticeship there, and now I'm currently working at Fractured Effects. They've done a ton. They did a ton of the stuff from Aquaman. I didn't work on Aquaman, but they did that. Last Witch Hunter with Vin Diesel.
Right.
Wow. They did a really good movie.
I love that movie.
That bombed, right? I didn't watch it all, but
I mean, I like it because I'm a D&D nerd, and that's basically just watching a D&D game. But I can see why it did pretty awful. If it did do awful, I don't really keep up with the
right
who makes a profit on what film, but yeah, they've been working on a lot of stuff, and I'm consider myself very blessed to be working with these people. Like, just there's multiple people that have just been in the industry for decades, and I've just been trying to pick up every trick I can. It's really cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, Rick, I spoke about it last time. We hadn't even met the first time you came to I forgot what episode it was, but
episode 7, I think.
7?
Yeah.
And you know, I think I was in May, so it's been a few months, but Rick is he's really into the haunt community and haunt that whole, you know, cemeteries and haunted places and immersive theater and things right. of this nature, and Joel does some of your makeup and things too, right, for your zombie.
We met when I worked at Sinister Point.
Yeah, Sinister Point.
Last
haunt season. He was one of the makeup artists of the crew they had mm-hmm. working there, and he actually did, I believe, my makeup on the first or second night, and it was very. I looked like a straight zombie, and I loved it. And there's a few other times that he did my makeup as well, and it got to a point that I got so used to him doing my makeup all the time, I purposely I had my three favorites, and they know who they are, and just I was like. If I noticed they were busy, I'd wait like in the queue. I'm like, oh, go ahead. I got to make a phone call. Or like, I'm stretching. Go ahead. And I see Joel's available. I'm next.
Right.
And so it just was very, the theatrical, and it had a very cinematic effect, the makeup. It just wasn't practical.
Mm.
And I loved that. And then the way, you know, I came across, I wanted to be very... I want my character to be very visual. I don't want to hide behind a bunch of heavy makeup or a mask.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that he had very dynamic and definition, like on the cheekbones or like mm-hmm. a certain prosthetic or just makeup, mm-hmm. it just made me, I got more into character because of that.
Yeah, I tried to, well, when I did his makeup, I tried to do a little more subtlety or practice a little more subtlety because he would get straight up in your face. and
really?
Oh, yeah. He would... Shocking. A big dude just wants to get in your face at a haunt. Right. What?
They would walk through. The artist would have to cut you off. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, no.
The artist would walk through just to check up on us. And I would always grab him and, like, by the arm, I was to grab him. But I knew who he was. Right. I'd grab him. And I'm like, why do you jump every time I grab you? And he's just like, apparently he didn't like it. Like,
well, no, I was trained in martial arts since I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
So going to haunted events is one of those things where I feel like I'm a liability because someone jumps at me, my first reaction is to swing. And I'm like, guys, just don't jump at me and we're good. And there was, I forgot who did it, but I mean, like, they jumped and I just swung and I'm like, no. And
came close.
And I punched the wall instead because I, like, knew. And I think it was the ongoing joke of, Joel's just a scaredy cat. I'm like, no, I'm not...
There was a reaction.
Wait, I'm prepared.
To me, it was more enjoyable, like to see like the artist coming through who did your makeup.
Mm.
So you saw him coming through, and you're like, oh, I'm gonna mess with Joel, or I'm gonna mess with Jessica, or I'm gonna mess with so and so. So when they came through, and I was just like,
right,
and they knew where I was hiding at. So I'm like, well, you're gonna expect me there, so I'm actually gonna jump out over there.
Yeah.
Is there a different approach when you apply this type of stuff to Rick versus a movie? Because I know in movies you got to stop and adjust. So are you confident when you apply this to haunt actors? Are you like, well, fuck, hopefully he doesn't fall off, you know, that type
well,
of thing?
Well, so Brandon Messenger is another amazing artist. Mm-hmm. He owns Odyssey FX. I've worked with him a few times with film. Great guy, great artist. He was the makeup designer for Sinister Point and has been for a long time. And he asked me specifically, he was like, hey, I want you on my team. And I'm like, dude, I don't do haunt makeup anymore.
Right.
Are you sure? Because I'm used to HD film, which is, I mean, when the camera's like, you know, maybe this far away, and you can count every pore on an actor's face because of, I was shooting, it was a student film, they were shooting 8K raw, and I'm like,
damn, man.
They make cameras that good?
Yeah, I never even heard of that. Like, wow.
What? So, I'm like, what happened? But, and so, I'm usually, with film, I have to do really minute detail and make sure everything's seamless, and, you know, you can get, you know, hours, if need be, to work on the makeup. They'll just shoot other stuff around it. Whereas a haunt, no, when doors open, we're on. I don't care if it's good, bad, or ugly. You're done. Yeah. You know. So that's just been the thing is, I've noticed, and every haunt, at least in Southern California, there's a very distinct style, and I jokingly call it like a cartoony zombie kind of look, but it's just really high contrast. They'll, you know, cut in on the cheekbones a lot more, make sure that the jawline's real sharp, and they use a lot of heavier lines because when there's a lack of light, in low light situations, you need a ton of just shapes and make sure that the forms there, like the subtleties, go right out the window, especially when you think of, people are only going to see this for a second.
Right.
It's not like a film where they can pause it and say, oh my God, look at this scene here. I was watching, I don't remember what movie it was, but it was this medieval film, and Morgan Freeman was in the beginning, and he had a beard piece, and it was really good. The hair pieces were good, but in one shot only, I could see it. The scene had just kind of fallen off, and I guess it was, they kept it probably because he had a great performance, and they're just like, okay, go back and fix it. And it was just one of those takes. It was like, no, the take was too good. We had to keep it. And most people, and I mean, seriously, most people don't notice things like this. And I don't know who the artist was.
Of course you would. I mean,
obviously. Well, yeah, trained artists do. And I'm not here to bash anyone. Like, it was, the hair pieces were actually really, really nice in that film. But for a haunt, those kind of subtleties don't apply. And it's one of those things where we would take, like, our little stipple sponge and look through it and like, okay, if you can't see it, it doesn't exist. So we really have to go do harder lines, you know, thicker stuff, you know, brighter colors, you know, make sure that things are saturated a little more because, you know, a bright red might not look good for a film, but when there's no light, and you know, in like a, it's like theater makeup, but without light, like that bright red is gonna look blood red. So there's a lot of a complete different culture to haunt makeup and film makeup, and I had to relearn everything on you know, yep, this is. I came in doing real subtle makeup using, you know, flicking color with toothbrushes and just, I mean, just for the like freckles and spatter. And
that's the one technique you did on me.
Yeah.
Where there was like paint splatters. I remember it covered my ears. There's pictures out there floating. And I remember it was very dynamic, just like very like sunken cheeks and hard lines. And then you did the splatter with the paintbrush.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and I'm like, this is effing amazing. And then I think everyone started doing
I remember Brandon started doing it a little more. I mean, everyone was using like a big chip brush, but it didn't have the same kind of breakup. But everyone slowly started, and that was one thing. It's not just, oh, everyone started copying. I'm not conceited enough to think that I was the only person worth copying. I started copying tricks from everyone, and I think everyone just kind of picked up sort of the best of the best. Like the best, like, oh, this person has this trick, and that's, they do that best. I need to learn that. This person does this trick, and I need to learn that. And so finally, we all kind of like,
you saw it,
synced up. I think by like,
mid-October, it seemed like,
yeah.
Like at first, you saw the different styles of makeup. Everyone's different. Like this person might be proficient in this.
Right.
This person's better at prosthetics. This person doesn't like prosthetics.
Yeah.
And you could tell the closer it got to haunt, everyone kind of just picked a little bit of from each other, and everything seemed very synergy. That's synergy.
Yeah, synergy. But I mean, like, if you look, you know, in my portfolio, I know there's one thing I did last December, like right after the haunt, and I needed to do a life cast and copy a person's face completely because they wanted, like, the Mission Impossible style, pull their face open. Actually, it was for Almost Cool... on YouTube. It was called, a little thing on YouTube called Conspiracy Party, but the channel's called Almost Cool. But they, the dude pulls, you know, grabs his hair and pulls it off, and then you see he's bald, and everyone at this little party is like, wait, what's going on? Because they're all hiding. And I don't want to give any too many spoilers away, but he just reaches back and opens the back of his head and just pulls off a mask, and that mask, you know, I spent 2 days on. And again, that's one of those things of, you know, I'm working with complete different mediums, and I have to go into like ridiculous subtleties to just have to match like just the coloration. And I think there's probably like 7 different colors, and I didn't really even paint anything with a paintbrush. Most of it was done just flicking with a toothbrush to get that natural breakup that your skin has, like a mottled texture. I mean, there was yellows, pinks, reds, just everything. And then I'd go in and blend it, and then the day of filming, he had like a 5 o'clock shadow, and I'm like, oh, now I gotta add that too.
Right.
Which is fine, but it was one of those things of, so if you kind of, there's a huge difference between the two, and I think that's where I kind of, I wouldn't say I struggled, but it was definitely, there was a learning curve there.
Nothing was creepy lifelike looking. I remember seeing it.
Oh yeah.
Picture, and it looked like I was like, ugh. It was that well done. I was just like, that thing looks like, I wouldn't want to see that in a room.
Most people, I showed my dad and he didn't know what was going on, but he's like, that's someone's face, but
yeah,
there's an arm. Like, yeah, dad, I made that. Right. He's just like, but that's someone's face. Yes, I'm aware.
Trial and error, I'm sure, right? A lot of
God.
Lot of hours not even on the clock. I'd imagine. Oh yeah, right? you'd just be at home maybe practicing or whatever,
goofing around. And luckily, I'm friends with two amazing artists. Well, I mean, I'm friends with a ton of artists, but the people who own Synapse Effects, Josh and Corinne Foster, and then also Joe Cornell co-owns it as well. I just started kind of coming around, and I don't know, they just let me help out every now and then. It was just like a little shop rat. And they let me use and come in and run some molds, and mm-hmm. watching how Josh practices just paint, it really inspired me on how he paints. This is style of model textures. They worked on Z Nation, and they were the makeup designers for the first three seasons, and I got to help out in the lab for season three, just doing like clay walls for molds, or for like, you know, I think I did like took the life cast and, you know, ran it in stone for them to sculpt on and stuff like that. But every now and then I get to go, you know, get to drop by and just, hey, I'm going to run a mold and, you know, paint, have a face to practice with, rent a mold or do this or that. And it's really helpful to have a community,
right,
of people who, you know, want to help each other, that believe in each other, and just want to reach out. And that, I think, you know, this endeavor with makeup of mine, just if I didn't have people really encouraging me and really like actually, you know, trying to believe in me, I probably wouldn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Who would be like your, I guess, an influential or influencer person that's helped you or that you like watching, or
Definitely one of the artists that really inspired me as far as the way I do bruises, specifically. It's funny, a lot of my friends, we all work the Chapman film circuit, so when we go see the screenings, they would know that, Joel did that makeup, and they can tell by the bruises. It was definitely Rallis Khan. He's one of my favorite makeup artists. I met him a couple times, and I really tried not to nerd out. I'm like, hey, dude, I apologize.
Right?
Yeah. I apologize. There's only a few people I'll really nerd out on. You're one of them. Rallis Khan, and he actually has a lot of really, really well-made tutorials as well, just for, you know, aspiring artists, and just so that every man can at least try to do something called Mad Monster Labs.
Instead of, like, keeping it all to himself, right? He's, like, helping,
you know? Yeah, and I mean, helping to an extent. I mean, as someone who has put in a lot of effort, a lot of work, mm-hmm. and, you know, did an apprenticeship, just put a lot into it, I think, you know, giving away all the secrets right off the bat isn't the best thing to do. But also, I think it's really helpful to show people, hey, here's the correct way to use this product. Here's a safe way to use this product. Here's how it's used. And he does that a lot, and also can show you an inexpensive way to really like a slit throat gag. Mm-hmm. He's like, hey,
yeah,
no, we don't all have, you know, access to a silicone mold, but here's something you can do. You know, we don't always have, or, you know, how he developed a way to do like blood hits, like for gunshot wounds. He's like, well, here's what I did for a music video, and it worked, and it worked well enough for me to use it in the Resident Evil Extinction, I think it was. The one that's like in Vegas, out in the desert.
Mm. I think that it's Extinction.
Yeah, Extinction. Yeah. He worked on that one. He's worked on a ton of stuff and a ton of music videos, and he's just a really cool dude. Every time I've met him, he's always nice. But I think as an artist that I don't know personally that has inspired me, definitely Rallis Khan or Greg Nicotero. Also, just, he's got a way of doing things. I think, I want to say it was From Dusk Till Dawn was okay. One of the was one of the early on like horror films that I watched as a kid. Had no business watching that, but it was cool. Like and again, I would look at being in theater since I was three. I knew this is. I knew that's a costume.
Right.
That's makeup. That's a fake knife. That's fake. This is fake. I knew it was all fake. But every time I would see certain films, I'm like, but I know it's fake, but how did they do it? That's the thing. And that's what I learned to really appreciate was, but how? And
right.
There's so many cool things that Greg Nicotero did and Tom Savini did in
From Dusk Till Dawn. Yeah.
He's been doing it going back to the early...
Yeah, like before Friday the 13th, right? Like
Dawn of the Dead movies, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The guy's in his 70s. I think he's still working.
Yeah, he has a school.
He's at the cons a lot, too.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I've met him once. He was a nice dude. He was cool. I got to meet him once.
Okay. So, Rick, you're starting to get into the whole vlogging thing now, right? To kind of document where you go and how you go and who you see.
I've kind of discovered through people I've met, like you and other guys, Justin and Jonathan, Mr. Death Breath, and I just, I've always had a thing for cinema, and when I was younger, even in college, I was this meathead football player and wrestler, but I was taking, screenwriting courses and, English comprehension. I'd write, screenplays or lyrics, and I always liked photography and cinema, so just recently, go places and all this, useless knowledge and facts that I know of, certain cemeteries or historical districts where I live, I got myself a little rig for my phone and just started recording things. And eventually, once I have the time to learn how to create a YouTube channel, I guess I'll post it on there. But for now, I've been doing everything on Instagram. And another thing, people are like, hey, you ever thought about voice acting ever since your first episode? And I'm like, well, yes, I have.
Matter of fact, I'm all, hey, baby.
I'm Barry White or someone. I never really considered it. And it's just some people are like, you should.
You got a great voice.
No, thank you. I've looked into it. I've created a profile and a website that does casting calls and voice work. I got to create some audio outtakes but the blogging. I'm getting into photography as well. Something just to keep me in mind because I can't be a monster year round. which I'm, the haunt season is right around the corner, so I'm looking forward to that too. But yeah, I'm digging it. It's just taking videos and pictures of things I go places. Even just simply setting up my coffee and taking this panoramic just shoebox kind of photo, and people are like, hey, I was doing some blogging in Long Beach at some art expo, and people come up to me and they're like, hey, what's your business, or what's your do you have a business card? I'm like, no, but you can follow me on Instagram, you can follow things I post. But yeah, I'm really getting into it, and it's more of just a kind of a creative outlet, and maybe someday it'd be an actual business. I did some blogging on the 4th of July at the Santa Ana Cemetery, and that thing's been there since 1870. And there's a lot of just old cemetery. And I went into the mausoleum, and maybe it's just my imagination, but as I was walking, I'm posting videos, and I'm just kind of being respectful of the ones that are laid for rest there. And I was all by myself in this mausoleum. And as I'm walking, and the last two steps before I stop, I hear, I'm like, I know I'm out of shape, but I'm not breathing that heavy.
Right.
And it sounded like an elderly woman breathing to me. I don't know. I just got the vibe of an older woman, and she let me know it's okay. You're here. I understand. Just, be respectful. I was like,
yeah,
okay, I'll be respectful outside. So,
right. So you can walk right into this mausoleum.
It's an open mausoleum. It's been there since 1916. The cemetery has been there since 1870. So we're talking about people that, originators and settlers who helped develop the city of Santa Ana and Orange County. And it's like the Spurgeon family, and Spurgeon's an actual avenue street in Santa Ana, or like the Trask family. Oh, that's a street. And just early settlers from Boston all over Europe and, the East Coast. But that was one place I was blogging. I'm planning on doing some video blogging down in San Juan and just different locations. I'm just kind of just getting my feet wet. Who knows? Maybe it'll be a Rick Creeper podcast one day. Who knows?
Yeah, man.
Do you know if there's any challenges in vlogging or any disciplines? Is it hard to keep doing it every day, or do you find some days where you're like, I don't feel like this, or is it just kind of natural? And
easy? To me, I want it to be kind of raw and gritty. I want people to see my perspective. I don't want it to be something that's very staged or act out. Hey, the camera might be a little wonky. Mm-hmm. It might not be the greatest angle or shot, but I want it to be my perspective, kind of like my POV. Well, it'd be my perspective, so that'd be that person's POV. I'll probably state some stuff. I did some research on the cemetery, and I made sure, hey, it's okay if I could do this here. Difficulty just having content or just having the time, I tried to get into a certain building, rooftop access, and I got caught doing it. I'm like, whoops, sorry. Besides that, just maybe just creating content and just, I don't want to have it too watered down and too, I guess, staged. But besides that, I just kind of like, it might not be for everyone. It's just my perspective. And for me, it's me first. And if some people want to enjoy it, hey, you're more than welcome to give me perspective. But I want it to be raw. I want it to be very, very real.
Well, see, and that's one thing I was going to say is there are a lot of polished things. And then there's yours. I like it because it's real. Real respects real.
Thanks.
You know? Thank you. That's one thing that I think you can see something and know, okay, this was fake. Like, there's a lot of YouTubers that have
stage,
and it's blatantly staged stuff. And it's like, come on, it's insulting. And and with you, I remember you were like, "Hey, did you see that?" And it's like, "Yeah, there's that that orb," and it was indisputably right there, just glowing orb. And I'm like, "Damn, dude!" A lot of people will try for years and not get that. So
I was
no problem. Sorry, guys. All right,
good. There's a church where I live at that's been there since. Again, I live in a historical neighborhood. This old Catholic church, in two different occasions I've gone. But one occasion, I try to debunk everything before I come to a conclusion. It looked like an orb, and it kind of manifests as it rotates and looks like an image of an upper body. And then when I kept examining this footage, I kept seeing images like in this doorway. And then this image is off to the side. I'm like, okay, it could be lighting, it could be camera flares, whatever. I go back to a picture I took of the same church, an actual photo, back in January, kind of like a 45 degree angle, same facade of the church, and the same damn orb in the same spot. I'm like, okay, that's got to be a camera flare. But I have other people look at it, and everybody knows it's something different. But just capturing that, I just was taking a cool video of this old church, and I watched it three times. I'm like, that looks like an orb. I mean, I'm no ghost adventurers, but I did a little history, and that church has been there since 1890, early 1900s, and a lot of old souls have came and went and passed through there. Who knows? But that's another thing I'm looking into as well. Just
do some ghost hunting?
Not necessarily hunting, but like, hey, there's been cases of supposed like paranormal activity here. Like downtown Fullerton, Riverside. Downtown Riverside, the Mission.
Mm. I heard about that place. The Mission.
Yeah.
That place is ooky.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to drag Michael Santana there one day, and we're going to do an investigation, maybe.
Let's do it. So, have you guys been to, which I may have asked you before, the Westwood Cemetery? Pierce Brothers, where Marilyn Monroe and...
Oh. You mentioned that to me before.
Both Poltergeist sisters are there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Dominique Dunn and Heather O'Rourke. Farrah Fawcett, the ashes of... Janet Lee is there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a trip because we'll go there one day, but it's in the city. It's surrounded by high rises. So you actually got to pull in around a building. I think there's like a Starbucks there.
And it's just a plot in the middle of the city.
It's, behind these buildings. And it's got quite a few people there. Walter Matthau, I think Jack Lemmon's there. And Dean Martin, Natalie Wood.
Wow, that's a lot of old Hollywood.
Arm and Hammer. His dad or whatever the main dude was. Yeah, he's got a mausoleum there. Mm-hmm. It's like a structure for some of his family there. Uh-huh. But I've been there quite a few times. But it's very interesting who's there and where it sits. You're like, wow, you don't think this should be here, but cool, you know?
I've been to Holy Cross Cemetery. Bela Lugosi's buried there.
Oh, really?
And it's traditional fans leave a black rose or the fake vampire teeth on his plot.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Same with Hollywood Forever. There's just so many people buried there, and it's a beautiful cemetery as well.
I'd like to go there.
And it's cool because it's open denomination. It doesn't matter, you know, who is there. It's open denomination, and there's the simplest little, you know, headstone to like these elaborate, just like monumental pieces and mausoleums. And at night, I think it's open till about 7-8 o'clock at night. But it's just very mosaic, and it's just very old history. I think Charlie Chaplin's there. Chris Cornell, we were just talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Couple of the Ramones brothers. James Manfield, is she there? A lot of old Hollywood, and just, again, people claim to see spirits of certain people walking around.
You would think, you know, a lot of those old stars would have some ties still, or unfinished, you know.
Unfinished business.
Yeah. Or just a reason to... You know what I mean? Like, and I mean, people can speculate all they want why ghosts are here or if ghosts are even real. I'm not here to debate that. I'm just saying, like, the idea of that, like, if anyone, it would definitely be the those old stars, because like the desire and drive to create,
to be involved and create create life and art.
But just to still stick around. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's that makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm. A lot of unfinished business, suicides because they couldn't make it, or you know what I mean. Of thing. Definitely. We did go to the neighborhood. We went to the neighborhood where they found the Black Dahlia.
Really?
It's homes now, but you can pull right up, and I think it's in between two houses.
She was found in an open field, right?
Correct. But now, now it's a fully blown, neighborhood. Wow. She was in half, right?
I think they cut her up. From the waist up.
And in half, and just completely mutilated. I actually saw the an exhibit at the Museum of Death in Hollywood, and just wasn't what I was expecting when I walked in there. It was from why I went was actually one of the dumbest. Like, my girlfriend's birthday, and I'm like, yeah, let's go, this would be awesome, right? We're gonna go the Museum of, like, and I thought we were gonna go through, like, someone told me that it was mostly like a thing of like torture devices and like execution and,
right,
and the history behind all these sort of things. And we get there and like, oh yeah, there's that tiny little thing, and then here's the rest of it, and mostly serial killers and stuff like that. But there was a whole thing on the Black Dahlia murder. I was like, yikes.
She was an actress, right? She was
up and coming starlet. Yeah,
I mean, she just disappeared, and to this day, it's still a I forget the term these, but an unsolved mystery. Yeah. Unsolved mystery. What happened to her?
Who's the writer that wrote L.A. Confidential? We say his name, I'll know it.
Oh, that was a good movie too.
Had you not asked, I probably would have known this. One of those things you know until someone asks you.
I saw a documentary on him a few times. It was on Netflix. His mother was killed and left back in the day, and so. What the hell's his name? I apologize. I'll know it if you say it. But he's
James Elroy. Elroy.
Is that James Elroy. James Elroy. Everybody. Thank you. Thank you, Anderson. Anyway, so his mom was killed, and left in the street somewhere down in the L.A. area when he was a kid. Jeez. She was last seen at a bar, apparently with some woman and a blonde man. I may have the details wrong, but anyways, she left this bar allegedly. With them, and then they found her body. But anyways, they got into the Black Dahlia case, and it's very—I forgot the name of the documentary, but it was on Netflix about 5 years ago. Geez. And they got to talking to some officers and some investigators. They were in a room with some LAPD officers. It was kind of like a round table, just to kick back. And they talked about that case, and there was quite a bit of insight of who may have done it. Obviously, no one really—I mean, there's ideas who may have done it, but no one really got caught for that. Yeah, correct.
So lack of evidence.
The whole theory, there's one theory, and it's like very Jack the Ripper-ish. It was someone of like high society, or someone high in Hollywood, that apparently killed her. So it was, again, this, we're talking what, the 30s, 40s, whatever.
Yeah,
you know, things were very hush hush. There was one theory that was swept under the rug because it was like a high power producer or someone big in Hollywood, so they kind of just made it go away.
I've been to the Wonderland Murders.
Oh wow!
That house. I don't know if you guys seen the movie.
Yeah, that was
bizarre, right? I mean, they do have John Holmes' fingerprint there, I guess, on a bedpost. He claims to not have been there, but
what'd you think of the movie with Val Kilmer?
I thought it was pretty good.
I forgot it was him.
Well, he's a chameleon. Yeah. Once he gets into character, you can just not recognize him as him. He's a super talented actor,
just like when he played Jim Morrison. Now, hopefully you guys know this, I heard when he auditioned, he didn't even audition for the role for Morrison, that Oliver Stone, or was it Coppola? No, it was Oliver Stone.
It was Stone.
He slept on his front yard in a tent to get his attention, like, look, I need to play Jim Morrison. I'm not auditioning yet. That's what I heard. Who knows, this is before the internet. But apparently he camped out at Oliver Stone's front yard at his house, like demanding, like, I need to play Jim Morrison for this movie. Okay. And again, another movie, you look at him, you don't see Val Kilmer. You don't see cheesy Batman or the dude from Willow. You see...
Right.
You see Jim Morrison, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
It's Mad Mardigan playing Jim Morrison.
Mad Mardigan, that's right.
You are great. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm done. That's nice. Right. Where else? George Reeves. Or is it George Reeve?
The original Superman?
Correct.
Yes.
By the way, Ben Affleck, hate him or love him, played an incredible George Reeves in Hollywoodland.
Oh, yeah.
You guys need to see that if you haven't.
That was a good movie. That was another good movie, too. I'll check that out.
I've been by that house as well. Still stands.
What do you think of the old Superman curse?
You can argue either way on that, I think.
I think Henry Cavill's doing pretty good, so...
Nothing happened to you. Dean Cain or... what's his face? Nothing happened to them, but apparently the curse went from the two Reeves and just... and then Christopher Reeves, he paralyzed.
Christopher Reeves, yep.
But,
and then the dude that played him in Superman Returns, whatever happened to that guy?
He was in Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
And then... I don't forget his name, but...
He's in something else. He played... I don't know his name either. I feel bad.
I'm sure he's still doing well, but as far as him playing Superman, people didn't take to that too well, I guess. Right? Mm-hmm. But Hollywood, man, we got to take a ride out there, man. I've been to OJ's probably 40 times.
Oh, geez.
I used to go down there a lot because I was infatuated, still am, with that case. You know what I mean? It's just, especially at night, man. It's you know, your mind starts going in what happened or how it happened.
So, I know we talked about going to. Bob's Big Boy, so the original in Burbank, so you can see where they filmed some of the Heat. Mm-hmm. I just want to go because the food is amazing.
Yeah.
Just
soon we will. Yeah,
I've seen Bob's Big Boy forever, man.
If you ever get a chance,
I don't even look at the menu.
If you ever get a chance, I used to live in Fort Worth, Texas.
A little
further, about an hour or so away, is Mineral Wells, Texas.
Okay,
with the I don't know if it's famous or infamous now, the Baker Hotel. That whole area, I love it because there is a presence there. It's like it's the Baker Hotel used to be like the premier hotel. There is actually a natural mineral springs and that's why it's called Mineral Wells in Texas. And they would have the mineral water baths and all these like treatments and spa treatments there. And before, you know, the major interstate, it was like right off the old Route 66. So everyone, who's who, would come and they'd stay there. But, and when people stopped showing up, the hotel kind of ran down and the surrounding area and it's not like nothing's dilapidated. And I'm not going to rag on the place, but it's very slow paced. It's like a time capsule on a town.
Did anything happen there?
Oh, dude, the place is so haunted. Suicides, I've been in there once. Don't go breaking and entering, kids. Just don't. it's not worth it to see a ghost. I've been in there once, and the whole place just has a heaviness. It's just a thick atmosphere, and surrounding it is just, I don't really know how to explain it other than it's like the air is heavy around you, and you feel that kind of static charge, that, you know, like there's energy in the air, but it's also, it's just weird. The whole place, it has so many weird vibes. It's such a beautiful place, but if you ever get a chance to get to Mineral Wells, Texas, or if you ever want to do a road trip, I'm down. I love going to Texas every time I get a chance to get it. But,
all right, so you've been to Dealey Plaza then in Dallas?
Yeah.
I've been there multiple times, so, uh-huh. Yeah. Wow, that's incredible too, man.
Yeah.
That's right next door to Fort Worth, right?
I'm from Fort Worth, yeah.
So Dallas is close by, right?
Yeah, it's like 20 to 40-minute drive, depending on how fast you go.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure where Oswald's, where his rooming board. I mean, I've been there. I just don't know the region, but I've been
grassy knoll area.
There. Grassy knoll,
to
the house where Oswald's wife was living during the assassination. That was a few minutes outside of Dallas, I think. But I haven't been to where you're talking about, but I've been to Fort Worth a couple times.
So. Yeah.
So last time I was here, I brought up a story about. and I'm going to ask you, see if anybody told you anything about it. working inside the maze for Sinister Point, the Evil in Two maze, some of the, particularly the girls, they said they saw and felt a presence inside the maze.
Oh yeah, that place is haunted, dude.
So it would.
don't listen to me. I don't know.
It was so. There was the area out the security console where I was at,
uh-huh.
And then as the customers passed the hallway to go into the two rooms, it was the second room before they exited back into the hallway. And a couple of the girls that you know as well, they told me.
I'm trying to think the geography of that maze.
So there was the hallway that I was in.
The hallway where you and then
the office, the security console where I was at,
and then
the two rooms across, and they
there's like the sauna.
Before that. So it was
okay, yeah.
So in that second room, particularly in the second room, the girl said like they would see like a shadowy figure hovered in the corner or it darted across the room or they felt an energy. And I never told anyone. I just kind of kept it to myself. But they all came up to me individually like, hey, I'm sensing something. And like, amazing. And all the stories were familiar. So I don't know if you ever heard anything.
I don't know. I mean, the jerk in me says... It's a haunted event, dude. I'm sure it's just someone goofing around.
Right.
But I'm not going to... But, I mean, if it is... Who knows? The place... I mean, like... I don't know if you ever saw where the makeup room was supposed to be.
It was by the restrooms.
Yeah. Like, that place... When I went on the tour, a different tour that y'all did, and I was looking through this, I'm like... That place just felt weird. Everything about that place felt weird, but... I mean, it's gone now, so who knows?
I heard stories, too, and I don't want to say which haunt, what attraction it was, but another Sinister Point attraction that dabbled with spiritualism and that things happened after that event.
Yeah, I've heard of a couple things on I think I know which one we're talking about.
Matter of fact, after I experienced that with a girlfriend at the time who was kind of witchy, something followed us home, and...
Nope.
I woke up in the middle of the night. I'm like, I don't know what that is, but you need to get out of my apartment. In so many words, and I didn't see it since. But if we're talking about the same.
Huh? Yeah, little seance thing.
Yeah, the seance. Yeah, okay. I was going to say the seance.
So Sinister Point has a ton of different little attractions,
right?
And we're not trying to advertise, but it's kind of accidental advertising, I guess. But they do a ton of little different like just pop up events, and they did
it was a mock seance.
Yeah, it was like it was supposed to be a fake seance. And they have all these like practical effects happening while you're doing it. And I've actually heard of a couple people saying that they really did feel like an actual thing, presence. Like people who were a little more seasoned in the paranormal.
They gave us a protection spell to take home with us and to read. And I think one side was in Latin, and then the translation was in English. But it was a cool like little just like novelty gift. But it was an actual like protection spell.
Did you guys ever see anything or hear anything after it's closed and you guys are there maybe when there's no customers or maybe before it opens? Have you guys ever heard any stories of that? Because that would be kind of interesting. And
the building's been demolished now.
I would go into the haunt early to drop off, my water, my prop throw up. And
Yeah.
And then just like coffee drops and all that. And just the hairs in the back of my neck would stand up, but maybe it was just my imagination on being paranoid. I would look into that room every time I would look in there.
Yeah, it's funny. There are places there that I just don't want to wander. I remember this very vividly. Like, there was over kind of... the hallway, someone told me, oh yeah, no, there's the break room. I always eat there. Everyone eats there. And I just went over there.
Nobody ever went in there.
No one ever went in there. And I went and ate there all by myself. And the whole time I'm like... I'm uncomfortable for no reason. I mean, absolutely no reason. I had such discomfort eating tacos.
It was a different vibe because originally, Jessica was supposed to have her own makeup room, and then Brandon over here, and it was this long hallway, and there was like our restrooms and a break room, but no one ever utilized that break room, and we used the restrooms, but you would have to go through these double doors, and it was this long hallway. And it looked like the scene out of Exorcist, that one scene, the third one.
No, it looked like the scene out of The Shining. There's just a hallway that just kind of, it feels like it goes on forever.
Ever.
It doesn't.
And they saw this door where it was a bunch of like loose lumber, and that was supposed to be the makeup room. And it was just eerie quiet. And it was just like...
But you say it. It's like, but when I was eating there, I knew I was all alone, but what made me uncomfortable was I didn't feel alone.
It was just
you know,
different energy.
It's that really, like, I feel lonely, but not like I'm by myself, and it was really freaking weird.
We're supposed to do a video blog for Escapade Games Escape Room.
Okay.
It's going to be kind of like each person's perspective and just a little teaser of what the actual escape room is. We're not going to reveal too much. We're going to have amazing film editor and videographer Michael Santana there as well. I'm more excited for
I don't know about that amazing part, but yeah, I'll be there.
The cool thing about it is they're giving us, you know, an open door policy, and they're like, yeah, you can film certain things, just not too much. Mm. And the way they categorize it is a horror-themed survival escape room. So it's going to be our experience, four different people, and at the same time, we're going to do a little editing and possibly just like a little vignette, like an advertisement for them, which they could use on their social media, or we could do on ours or whatever. So that's going to be fun.
Any reason why you picked them? Were they more personable to...
I was just personally really, really impressed. It was my very first escape room, and it was the guy that manages the place. You probably know him. He's from, I forget his name, Tim. I don't know Tim's last name. He was at Knott's for 15 years, so he manages it. So the owners gave him creative control to like design, to come up with concepts, to make it very immersive. It's not one of those, the ones that Scaredy Cat likes. They choke you and there's a little light touching, and there's actors that pop out, and it's very climactic, and there's like these cinematic build up of like this music, and I tell you, it's like a horror movie. I had the key to open the door, and I was freaking out. And then here comes the scare actor, and he's timing it like he's stalking you. I just liked it. I was very impressed. I was like, you know what? These people seem pretty cool. I've interacted with them on social media. So we're supposed to have something scheduled for this Thursday. And if we do and things work out, we'll have a pretty cool video. And awesome. I'm looking forward to the experience, because we've been talking about it for a while.
The only thing I've ever been to is like, you know, Halloween or Universal Halloween Haunted, whatever that's called, HHN, and not Scary Farm. Mm-hmm. So I haven't been to anything else, I don't think, anyway. Especially if they don't so much grab you, and do they pull on you or hold you, or
they're gonna tie you up, Mike.
Cool.
No, it was a little light touch without revealing too much. They touched me once, just when we entered.
Yeah.
And besides that, there was nothing else. Okay. But it was like, it did get very close, not to a point like, oh my god, they're gonna do something to me. It just was very, very interactive, but not to a point like, you know, 17th door or like blackout where they're
haunting
you. No.
Or that, what's that guy, McCamey Manor?
McCamey's Manor? McCamey Manor. That dude's a freak. Sorry.
Was it the Great Haunted Campout or something like that?
Yeah, we're like, you're
just... they will drag you out of your
I've
tent.
Heard of that one,
They
man.
Will drag you out of your tent.
You chose a level of immersion, and there was a flag on your tent like, hey, I don't want to be bothered. Yeah, make it a little fun. And the red flags, no, we're going to kidnap one of your party members, and you're going to have to find them. Because there was like a scavenger hunt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you'd have to find one of them party members in your group who was kidnapped. But no, it's nothing like that. It's just, it's going to be really fun, because it's a very small space. I don't want to reveal too much. But again, like I said before, it was like of an escape room and a haunt hand a baby. And it's this like immersive like escape room that was interactive came out. It's really, really cool. There's key points where he knows where to come out.
Oh, that's cool.
So, I don't want to say too much. One thing I struggle with, I'm like, I'm the least musically talented here, so you guys figure it out. And then it was like something like wiring up an electrical panel. I'm like, oh, I could do that. And it got to a point where the actor jumped out, and that's where I was struggling with the key. Yeah, but that's very fun. We got something else on the back burner as well. Possibly a video for Phantom Carriage Brewery in Carson. Okay. I don't know if you've ever been. It's a horror-themed brewery, so they have a... Each beer, it's a local brew they make there, or they get like guest beers from other breweries. Everything's horror themed. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like old Vincent Price artwork and like Creature of the Black Lagoon and just very old Universal monsterish. And they have a viewing room where they show movies, and it's like these old leather couches and whatnot. They have an amazing kitchen as well. And every Wednesday they do like old slasher movies. So they do like trivia with old slash rooms and good food and beer. And then they have like a private guild room. So there's like private membership. They have like this candlelit dinner. You join the membership and you sit in a separate room. And there's this cool music. One day it went from like I walked in and it was like heavy metal. And then it went to jazz, and they had like a live DJ. And it's just a really cool place. But we're possibly going to do a video for them next month, and then we got invited to do, they're going to have a mock Halloween party in August. They want us to go in costume, so you're going to have to cosplay, so I am too, if you want to go too as well. So.
You're giving me an opportunity to play dress up?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be... That's going to be an episode for that's going to be an episode on one of the Food Network or Food Channels. Nice. And it's going to be their mock Halloween party, which they're going to film in August.
Joe, we were talking off camera about the remake of Evil Dead and scene where she's peeling her face off. Now, as a effects guy,
yeah,
you can't figure that out?
Well, it's not that I can't figure it out. What I mean, what I was talking about was, like I said earlier,
because I can't,
my whole life, I've always looked at effects and was like, oh, how'd they do that? And there's only a couple movies that I've seen that really make me cringe and get me out of that headspace and like, oh, no, that's real. That's happening. And in Evil Dead, the new Evil Dead that came out recently, that face peeling with the broken glass... I guess it was just one of those things. It was just. It's like every serial killer uses a knife. No, this chick just picks up a broken piece of glass. There's something really raw and visceral about it. And
yeah, then she it was
just
fucked, man.
Grabs and just pull and just like
self infliction. This is
and also I made the mistake of eating before I went and seeing that film. But that particular shot, and also there was one which I will attribute to sound design. In that scene when they're like in the basement, it's all full of water and they just get stabbed and you hear that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just shows this perfect little knife go right in. And I know that would be, if it was a fixed blade, it's just a fake stomach that they slide it into. But it was the sound and it was just a little bit of everything. When all the movie magic comes together, you know, even the people who make films are just like, there's always these little moments.
Yeah, like the Mission Impossible mask. I mean, I get what they did, but I just don't get it. You know how...
Oh, yeah, well...
You know what I mean?
When you make a copy of someone's face, there's already some Uncanny Valley nonsense there.
That's right. Like what he did. That mask he did was a replica of your friend.
Of Heston, the actor.
It just looked weird. It almost like, that looks weird. It looked like something out of Westworld, like the original one.
Right. Yeah.
It had like dead eyes. It was just creepy.
Oh, no, his eyes are closed. And the funny thing was, and if you see it, I guess only a trained eye would notice these things, but so they didn't have the budget for you to do a corrected positive, which is when you do a live cast. So most people think, I get hit up a lot for people wanting custom masks or custom prosthetics. Like, yeah, I have a live cast of me. I'm like, okay, that's a start. Or I've got the stuff to do a live cast. You do a live cast, and let's say we go all out and we do a silicone a platinum silicone live cast with a what's it called? Just like a plaster banded shell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then we run that, and usually you're going to run that in, like, a clay. And then you pull it out, and you'll see where all the air bubbles were. So you'll usually get some little, like, bits around the nostrils, a little bit, like, in the eyelashes, maybe around the ears. Any trouble spot that people kind of subtly move, and they're, like, little things like that, they just do when they're in there. And you kind of tell them, hey, okay... This stuff's really starting to set, so we need you to hold whatever face you're going to hold. Just hold it and be still for as long as possible. And a lot of times they do it, but there's always a little imperfection. Then you correct all those out, and usually you sculpt their eyes open. And then you make a mold of that. And then you run that in stone or resin or whatever, and then you can sculpt on that. Then you make a mold of that, and then you can... Then there's your prosthetics. So there's like... You know, three forms and four molds later, you actually, there's your prosthetics. But so we only did a life cast, and I just ran that in a urethane rubber because they didn't really have the budget to go do all the steps to make
right
a second form, a second mold, and have me sculpt it and correct it. So I had to paint around that. I had to... And there was, you know, you can see where his hairline was from the bald cap, or under the bald cap, in one little spot here where the bald cap tore around his sideburn, so I had to like patch it with another piece of the bald cap. There's little things like that. But when you look at it, it's still, it's in this uncanny valley because it's just an expressionless just face.
Yeah.
It was creepy looking. It was just...
It's even weirder when it's just a rubber. Mm-hmm. When it's just a rubber head and there's no pores. And it's all one color and there's no modeling, no skin texture, mm-hmm. no anything. It's a little unsettling.
Have you done a cast yourself? Like someone done a cast on you?
I've done a partial cast. I know I've done my nose. I've done this part of my face. And I did a chin. I've had it go wrong when they were doing just like... I did a face cast mm-hmm. once. And they put straws in my nose and bumped it, and I got a nosebleed. So you got it, and that's one of the things you got to be careful. And you can't move. You're like bleeding out of your nose through a straw, and you're like,
"This is why I ask, because you could probably relate to this. I'm claustrophobic.
Yeah, dude.
So, like a full bust, like we're talking like neck, shoulders.
Oh yeah, it would go down to here.
How uncomfortable is that? I mean, everyone's level of comfort's different, but.
Well, the trick is, you know, your technicians are supposed to make you as comfortable as possible. And actually, it was really funny. Like, Heston, the actor who I did that to, and I've done live casts on a couple people, but we were playing music in the lab, and we had, you know, just some music, and he just was like, "Yeah, it's actually really relaxing." He said right about the time where I thought, "Okay, I need to get out of here soon." Right about that time was right when we're like, "Okay, hold still, we're gonna cut you out," you know. And so it was one of those things. He's like, "Yeah," he's like, "any longer and I may have started to like, okay, I need, this needs to stop."
I don't know if I could, like, is that Michael Santana bus worth sitting there for it? I'm like, it looked like a cool mask, but I couldn't.
I'm very claustrophobic as well. Like MRIs, I can't do the tube thing, so I have to go somewhere where
I did an open one.
I can't do it. I got into it was like a sumo wrestling suit. You seen those things?
Oh, yeah.
Nope, can't do it.
I got in. I didn't know, right? I got in, and then I told the dude, "I got to get out of this because I couldn't move," so he got me out. Like, I freak out, dude.
Right.
I don't – like, I can't really even watch movies. Well, I watched The Descent, that which freaked me out, but I can't really watch movies where people are trapped, bro, like that mining movie or whatever one.
You wouldn't like The 17th Door because – they make you, there's a crawl space and there's airbags, I think, above you, and they push down on you.
Yeah, dude, I can't do that. Yeah,
but also, there was one of my favorite. I hate a strong word. I really don't like found footage films.
Okay.
And they're really popular right now. But As Above, So Below. I don't know if you saw that.
I won't watch it because
it's creepy. Yeah. It's, and no, touch of religion.
I'm not really all that claustrophobic. I mean, I think my cousin stuck me in a cooler once, and it really, it screws me for a little bit. Like, but I'm like, I'm not super claustrophobic. I don't like it after a while, but like that movie,
great movie, but it made my skin crawl.
Like, Aliens is one of my favorite movies. In that part where Bishop has to crawl on that,
when he's in up, the lights,
yeah, dude,
it's hard. They're, and that's when they, as a filmmaker. I look at things like that and say, that's what I want to do. You know, when you can have the crowd like holding their breath, thinking that every breath they take is going to waste oxygen because they're in that tight space with the actor.
They get lost in the moment.
When you can get lost in the moment. And I think that's what's really cool with any effect. But horror, especially, because the horror genre is there to play on your senses, to play on your emotions, to... you know, trigger you, for the lack of a better term. And it's supposed to do that. And I think it, psychologically we need that to prepare us for any actual situation where we can, like, okay, we play pretend in our mind. What will we do if this happens? Okay. So it allows us to kind of relax in a real setting. But it's like when you're watching it and you're watching that aspect, it gets really, really interesting. I think it's cool.
It's like some of the scare actors, if you react to what they're doing, they'll pick up on that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I went to Reign of Terror, and he looked like Charles Manson, but like emancipated. And he just was very touchy-feely, got close, and I reacted to that, so he played on that. And just, he made me uncomfortable. I wanted to grab the guy, but I couldn't. But the fact that he crossed that, once he saw that I had that reaction, he crossed that threshold. And I got immersed in it, and I forgot oh, this is just a maze, this is fake. Same with movies. It's like you lose who the, you forget who the actor is. You see the character or the scenario they're in, like going into catacombs or just like, and then like that's a great movie. It's just religion's a sensitive subject, and then underground dwellings or having to go underwater.
Oh, well, no, what's really interesting is all of the stuff on Alchemy with Nicholas Flamel and all of the, all of that's kind of based on a real thing.
Yep.
It's like, I've read parts of Nicholas Flamel's book. I know, and then all the historical things where they're like, oh yeah, it just caved in for like no reason. Yeah, that happened too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this stuff was really like, you watch it, and if you know the history, if you know, you know, the
lore.
Exactly, the lore in it. That movie, I think, is one of those that, like, oh,
this really happen.
Actually, on a certain level, could be, you know, real. And I also just felt like Tomb Raider. Like, Tomb Raider goes to hell. what I was feeling on it. It was also, it reminded me of the Tomb of Horrors, like old school D&D with the hidden crawl spaces and the,
yeah, that's very
the puddle, the puzzle solving, and then all the haunting imagery from your own past kind of thing.
Yeah, a little bit off subject, maybe not, mm-hmm. but just that feeling. Blackfish, have you seen that, where the killer whale takes the diver down there at SeaWorld, and he's very relaxed, but he has to hold his breath for a few minutes, mm-hmm. a few times, and the killer whale takes him down to the bottom of this tank, bro, mm-hmm. and it's all on video.
I'd freak out.
And he made it because it let him go for a minute, and then he just took off swimming, and they pulled him out. Anyone not trained for that is done.
I would have passed. First trip to the bottom, I would have been done.
You're breathing in water, that's it.
I would have panicked. And
interesting thing. So with salt water, it doesn't absorb into your bloodstream as quickly.
Okay.
So you actually, this is something I read, like, you don't die right away from it. So if you it's like you can be down there for much longer in salt water and still be conscious, just waiting for that to happen, like waiting to shut down. So it's like one of those things, or it was explained to me that way, because salt water doesn't get into your system the same way that fresh water will. So it's one of those things of, from what I gathered, this could be completely wrong, it's easier to resuscitate someone
in salt water than fresh water.
Exactly. So maybe it's also, being in salt water, he could have just like, okay, they can bring me back, it'll be fine. Or maybe not. I don't know. See, I don't really know the science behind that, and also I'm not a trained diver. But and
it's like that scene from Creepshow, the one with Ted. You know, Creepshow had multiple little stories. It's the one with Leslie Nielsen and Ted Danza. Mm-hmm. Where he buries him up to his head. Mm-hmm. And when I see the water, I was a kid. To this day, the movie still gives me the creeps. And the water's coming up to, you know, his eye level. And then Leslie Nielsen, I can't take him serious. Got picture him from The Naked Gun.
Right.
You know, it's all, Shirley must be serious. Or Airplane, whatever. Yeah. You know, don't call me Shirley. You know, I was like, I can't take him serious. And he was a serious actor originally. Okay. So it's the scene, like the water level gets higher and the tide. Then it's that cut scene. It's very like just kind of like a comic, like the lighting and everything, and there's like seaweed float, and you see Ted Nance is submerged in water, and then they come back to life, and they're like zombies, but they've been waterlogged.
Right.
Then they buried Leslie Nielsen. That anything with water, even like Jaws, anything with deep water. I love the beach, but I will not go in water. I cannot see the bottom.
The end of Cape Fear, where De Niro's handcuffed to the sinking boat.
That's,
and he starts speaking in tongues.
That scene is hard.
That's
a hard scene to watch, just because it's like you just have to embrace. It's one of those scenes where you just embrace the fact that you're just screwed.
You're done.
Like, what do you do? Right. Just breathe in the water, and then it's salt water. You won't go unconscious. You'll sit there. You won't just die.
Anything with deep water, even though when I was a kid, I was terrified. And again, it's probably like 3 feet worth of water, like Pirates of the Caribbean. Like going into the boats, I picture like we're out in the deep water and there's these Spanish galleons like fighting, and I'm like, I don't want to fall in the water. And now you look at the water, I'm like, you can see the rail, the ride, and I'm like, that's what I was afraid of. But
right,
any movie with like deep water, or just like, even like I wasn't a big fan of the Friday 13 movie, but like just seeing Crystal Lake or like Jaws, you know, I was afraid to go in the pool, and I was a kid, I'm looking in the deep end, I'm like picturing it was the pool. Why would Jaws be in the pool? But anything with water or just suffocation or just like tight areas.
I mean, even at the pier, at the beach, man, looking down into that murky water, it just freaks me out.
Yeah, great whites can swim. They can swim up to like 4 feet worth of water.
Yeah.
And then you guys got out there. No,
I'm good. Can't do it, man. Can't do it.
Well, here's a fun fact. We know more about the surface of Mars than we do about the surface of most of the ocean on the
Earth. That's true.
We know more about things out in space than we do in our own ocean. That
they're still finding Pacific species Rim's down really there.
Yeah. Like I promise you.
There was a movie like Leviathan and
Leviathan.
What was the other one? They came up back to back.
Deep
Blue 6 or Deep Star 6, and those two. Like whenever they did a disaster movie, they came out back to back.
Right, like Armageddon and Deep Impact, right?
Yeah, horrible. You know, that was like the 90s right there.
Right.
But like there was Leviathan, and the other one was
I know what you're talking about too, damn it.
Deep Blue 6, I forget, but it's the same concept. There's this underwater team down there, and they're drilling or going through these caverns, and they're stuffing like different species, and just you couldn't pay me $1 million to be down there. It's like anything with water in, I can't see my surroundings or tight areas. Like our phobia maze, I couldn't do the crawl spaces at Sinister Point. It just
did you try it, or you just knew you couldn't?
I told them no, and they showed me the exit.
So one of the things I kind of wanted to talk about was like just character design or creature design. You know, in all these classic horror films or even the new ones, I know. Yeah, I know you're a fan of the Xenomorph.
Yes, sir.
The H.R. Geiger's design. Like, what was it about that really attracted you to it?
Well, it wasn't just the Xenomorphs. It was the atmosphere, space. Even though we talked about being confined,
yeah.
Because they were in a big ship and things, I guess I looked away from that part of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just felt like I like the darkness of it, man. Like you're not here, you're not on Earth, so you're somewhere else, and now you're fighting something else, and you can't escape to where I'm used to here on Earth.
Really. Yeah,
you're stuck up there, and the camaraderie amongst the crew, the dark hallways. I don't know. I guess it's just the darkness of it, including the Xenomorph, the Xenomorph skin and the way it moves and hides in the shadows and. I don't know. I just became like accustomed to those. The first two, you know, especially the second one.
Yeah, the second one I think was really cool because the first one there were certain shots where it's like, oh, that's a man in a suit.
Right.
There were other shots where it's like, I don't know what the hell that is. I think in the second one, they had like a small number of suits and they just shot it in so many ways. So it looks like there's a whole army of them.
Right.
But they got so many cool angles and it's like. It was so interesting to look at it as going back as a makeup artist. There's certain movies that I hadn't seen since starting in makeup. I just like, oh, I love that movie, but you know, never got a chance to watch it again. And then finally watching it again, I was watching Alien Resurrection.
Okay.
Which, not one of the best ones, admittedly, but it was fun, you know, and the different designs. It's like a weird bug kind of thing, you know, like the shell that they have. But there was also the, it was her baby, if you will. Like that one was just, it's gross. It's
grotesque. Yeah, it was.
And there's so many cool, like, aspects of the sculpt of the, someone had to think that up. Someone had to put that on paper. Someone had to sculpt that. And then they made it, and someone painted it, and then someone covered it in slime, and then someone lit it, and it's just like the. And it's funny because most people don't think of that camaraderie when it comes to things like that, because it's like, oh, that's probably 50 people's job, you know.
So you're saying like different levels of creativity. This person sculpted, this person did textures, like that glistening effect or the drooling of the mouth, like special effects, or the elongated head, or. Just different. Everyone worked on something different.
Someone worked on the it was Odd Studios who did the new Aliens, Alien Covenant.
Oh yeah, Covenant.
Covenant.
Yeah.
And they were showing some of the behind the scenes stuff on their testing, where they had this giant syringe, and they had the fake chest, and it had an incision on the inside, so it was weaker there, and they would push, and they had, like, I don't know, I guess it was, like, a combination of, like, as we call pie filling, which is just it's a vegetable starch-based slime that's a little, and it is actually, it's methicil, which is the stuff you use for pie filling. It's a vegetable starch thickener stuff, and so it's that, and then you have it, it's a little watered down, so it's runnier, and they've got the chest burster in it, and they just, and it just blows out. It's like, yeah, then there's the practical effects technician sitting there, okay, and action, and squish, you know, yep. And that's what's cool, again, going back to the how they do that, it was, I remember, I think it was Aliens 3 was the first one I saw, I must have been like 9, and I wasn't scared of it. I was so intrigued by it. Like, what is this thing? What's it want? What's it made of? What is it? You know,
the uncertainty of it.
Yeah, but also the slick. It was always wet. It was always wet. It was always. It had all the weird H.R. Geiger looking, you know, textures that looked like combination of cables, and you know, biomechanic looking things,
right?
And but it was this space bug thing, and like the design on that was really intriguing.
Yeah, and that one, I know 3 gets a bad rap. You brought that up earlier. It had some CGI going on with Aliens, but 3 to me wasn't as bad as people are saying it was.
I enjoyed it, but of course
I enjoyed it. It's not my favorite.
The concept to me is awesome. Now how they, you know, made that work, maybe I could see people having issues with that, but you know, 2 and 1 are my favorites.
My favorite scene out of 2 is I forget what soldier, I don't know if it's Hicks or Hudson, but Hudson, they have the scanner, and they can see the aliens are getting closer and closer to them, and it gets to a point they're like 40 meters away, 30, 10, there's like, they're right on top of us, man. It was Bill Paxton, and they don't realize they're in the Hudson crawl space.
Yeah.
And they open up the crawl space, and like the light, I think the light, they had lights on their helmets, lights up the crawl space, and you see the aliens just like, and they're doing like the crawl all fast.
Yeah.
And upside to me, down. I was just like upside down. I'm like, oh, and they all just drop down. Uh-huh. And that screech they have when they get shot.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. And it's like, eh, oh.
And that sequence.
To me, it's a horror movie. It's a sci-fi horror
thing. Definitely.
Most definitely. Because you're taken out of an environment. It literally, you put them in space, and they're being stalked, the original one, they're being stalked by unknown, you know, figure, entity, or monster, or whatever. And the thing's picking them off one by one. Mm-hmm. Then the second one, it gave you kind of like, it's a bad reference, but kind of like a zombie outbreak movie, because there's multiples now.
It was actually based on the Vietnam War.
Really?
Yeah, it was legitimately based on the Vietnam War. It was supposed to be, you have cocky soldiers going into unknown territory
Marines.
Against an unknown enemy. Against,
and they expected no resistance.
Yeah, expecting little to no resistance, and having to deal with a combat scenarios that they were never trained for, and that's what it was supposed to be based on. Like it was because, and when you look at them, that's exactly what it was. It's like, yeah, they went, yeah, we're just gonna go on this mining planet, right? Yeah. Yeah, this is not going to be a
space
problem.
Marines.
Yeah,
were...
yeah, they're just like,
this is, right,
get a can of Raid, they're bugs, who cares, you know, whatever. And then they are met with a superior force on, just in just everything was unknown, and they went in just half-cocked, and I'm not trying to badmouth, you know, our military in real life, but I was saying that was what it was supposedly kind of based on, and I think that... Hmm. That it's a, and that's kind of the difference between, you know, I would say the original Alien versus Aliens, when you had, what was the director?
Ridley Scott did the first one,
and
Jim Cameron.
Yeah. Second. Love Ridley Scott's subtle approach, and then James Cameron made it like a war movie.
Yeah,
he did.
He took it way over the top, but I think both have their place because it's like, yeah, this would be the next inevitable step.
Yeah,
dealing with it.
First one is a subtle kind of.
It was very.
What is this thing?
There was like the first one. Not to cut you off. I'm sorry.
No.
There was like dead areas. There was like dead areas in the movie, and you're just like in this huge ship with this like weird looking structure, and just All there is the score and like, I forget her name in the movie.
Ripley.
Yeah. And it's just waiting. And there's a suspense building up, and it's very just like cinematic, and there's this like the score playing, which I have it on vinyl, remember I brought last time.
Awesome.
And you're just watching this film, and like, is this thing going to jump out on any, and there's like the suspense and this unknown what's going to happen. And the second one is just like running gun. They're like, hoorah, and they're getting killed.
Yep.
The only thing I don't like about the second one, I wish they killed Paul Reiser right away. I hated that damn character. I was like,
Burke? Yeah, Burke was a real dickhead.
He dressed like the douchebag, and I couldn't stand him. I'm like, right. You knew from the beginning, like, you're going to be the dude that's going to turn on every... You're the turncoat.
Right.
That's why the way he died, I think I clapped when I was a little kid. I did like the slow clap. I was like, I couldn't stand that dude. But the first one to me was very... It was just like a very theatrical buildup and suspense and like things hidden in the shadows.
Yeah.
And that's what made it very terrifying. And finally you see this thing, you're like, what the hell is that?
When you look at it, it's like it's designed to be in the shadows.
Yeah, exactly. And it blended in like in the way the ship was designed and built, like the alien was like part of the ship.
With the biomechanics.
Yes.
For sure.
And that's
like, there's a scene in two when they come down from the ceiling and they kind of drape down on their tails and they're all like
cords
and like, exactly. What the hell?
Yeah, and going back to the design, it's like you could tell what it was designed to camouflage itself into.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's kind of crazy about creature and character design. You can, when, and exactly how it's used with from like a really slow, subtle, suspenseful movie where it's hiding compared to when it's just, you know, up against a bunch of commandos and it's like, well, that's not what it's there for.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and their leader, Apone, was killed, one of the first to get killed. So now they're stuck without their leader in a place against something they're not trained for, right? I mean, those movies, one and two, there's a few movies where I actually feel like I'm there with them
when I'm
watching. You get lost in the moment. That's
good storytelling.
You know what I mean? I'm there with them. Yeah. Like, I'm riding with them.
When they're riding in the, like, it's the tactical vehicle.
Right.
And they're trying to get out, and you feel, like, the tension, like, you're in there with them.
By the way, I don't like that space in there, too, when they're...
when they drop? But, yeah, I couldn't... Yeah. I would.
Yeah, man, I couldn't be asleep there.
Or whatever they are. Yeah,
so...
I got one last question from my side. What is one of the projects you enjoy working on the most in your career so far?
Oh, man.
That you can talk about.
That you can talk about,
that I can
right?
talk about legally. Well, I cannot talk about a couple of them, although I'm wearing a crew shirt for one. If y'all have noticed, I really appreciated being on that project. I can't talk about it, though. But, honestly, working a bunch of like student films was most of my career. I can say that there's a lot of ups and downs, and it teaches you a lot with communication and how to work with anybody. But there's an independent film I worked on. I actually co-produced, and it's still in the works. It's still in post, as we say. It's called A Killer Inside, and it's about. It's about a guy who very meticulously stalks his prey, and on the day he's going to get the girl, this other girl interferes, and he ends up taking her. And this chick is the first girl he's ever had fight back. And so most of the film is, you know, two talking heads, really, in a room. She's chained to like a gurney kind of like thing, like her by her leg, and the storytelling of, I really appreciate it. I might be a little biased, but this one was really cool, just from start to finish that I saw to completion, because you see her evolution from a normal chick who, you know, works out. She was on her way to the gym when she got taken, and from being that to getting herself into the mindset of a hardened killer, because it comes very apparent, I will not get out of this alive. It is either me or him. And that film, I co-produced, I did some stunt coordination, I did all the makeup and practical effects, and it was very stressful. We did it with a crew of three people, for the most part. We had, like, occasionally had some other day players hop in, but we did it because we knew we you're getting distribution on this, and come hell or high water, it will make money. So that one I was really proud of, because it was something that I was there from the beginning of and saw it to fruition. There's also a student film I worked on. It, you can actually see it on Amazon Prime. It's, I mean, it is a student thesis film, so, you know, go in with that knowledge. But it was a steampunk film. It was about this a crash. It's about a crash. These two lightning harvesters. That's how they, in this world, that's how they collect electricity. And they crash land, and they have to dispose of the electricity so it can't be weaponized and shoot down more ships, because they're scavengers.
What's the name of it?
It's called Steamwrecked.
Steamwrecked. Steamwreck. Okay. Amazon Prime?
It's on Amazon Prime. And it, I don't really know how to explain it other than, I mean, it's like a 15-minute film. It's not long. It's just a little student film, but it's on Amazon Prime. And I think that one was really cool, because it actually, we were out in the desert filming out in Joshua Tree, and it was like 35 degrees, 70 mile an hour winds, and everyone's out there suffering together. And we even did a night shoot in it.
Damn.
And it, but when it was all said and done, seeing it to completion, I'm like, this is one of the best that I've one of the best like complete finished products that you know, that I had done with the school. And the fact that it got on Amazon Prime and is getting distribution, I think speaks for itself. That one I'm really proud of. Everyone did an amazing job. I made the leather armor for it.
I'll check it out.
Makeup. It's fun. It's kind of like The Revenant, but steampunk. But yeah.
Great. So where can we find you on Instagram?
Oh, on Instagram, you can find me under one of two things. One's Profession Nerd, which is supposed to be Professional Nerd. or that one's just, that's my private, or that's my personal one. And then Apotheosis Makeup Effects. I know it's a huge, huge thing. It's a huge name. I'm in the process of changing it up.
Well, I'll put the graphic up nice and clear, so but, everybody can see it.
But you can just plug in my name, Joel David Reed. You can find me, or you can look at the hashtag "This Ain't Your Mommy's Makeup." That's one thing I've been pumping along. But yeah.
Okay. And Rick, where can we find you?
RickCreeper11 on Instagram. Also, I have a secondary account. It's Dark Alley Productions.
See, that's so much easier.
On Instagram, it's more videography and just imagery, and eventually probably possibly a podcast. We'll see. That's a hobby of mine that just, I literally started, I think, yesterday. So.
Great. Well, I want to thank you guys again.
Thanks for coming out, man. Thanks for having me. Thanks for hosting this.
And for sure, bro. It was an awesome space. We'll do it again.
I'm just excited to see Michael Santana again. That's like the coolest name in the world. I mean,
well, thank you, man. I'm humbled. I appreciate that.